This is the son of PCJ.
This is London. This is London.
The Voice of Russia World Service.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing on.
This is the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland, with a relay transmission via Bonaire in the Netherlands and Antilles, directed from New Zealand.
This is Radio Prague, Czechoslovakia.
Ici Radio Canada. This is Canada.
Bonjour à vous si vous nous rejoignez sur Radio France Internationale. Il est 5h à Paris.
This is Radio Ukraine International.
This is the English program of Radio Deutsche Welle, Germany's international broadcasting service.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette Macquarie and Keith Perron.
Hello and welcome to the program. Coming up this week, we first head off to Burma. There are rumblings that the government is planning to reform its media. Will this really happen? Well, some people remain skeptical. In Sri Lanka, a government official has been condemned by the foreign minister after he made threats for violence against journalists and human rights activists. We will have a special report from the capital, Colombo. And then finally, did you know that sending an email is just like sending a postcard? So, do you feel secure enough to write your personal details in an email, or even write them on the back of a postcard? Well, we'll tell you a little bit more about how secure it just is. Media Network Plus, bringing you the who, what, where, when, and why. First, here's Paulette with a look at some of the headlines for the world of media.
After almost 2 years of preparations, the Rwandan parliament has launched its radio station, Radio Inteko, on FM 101.5. The radio station was officially launched amid celebrations from a cheerful audience of senior government officials and a blend of local musicians. During the event, the minister in charge of cabinet affairs, Prote Musoni, noted that the general public will be directly connected to parliament. This development is timely because for the public, parliament is just a call away. There is direct access. People will no longer have to wait for updates on government businesses, said Musoni amid applause. This is in line with government's desire of creating awareness by disseminating vital information regarding various policies, said Musoni, who is also in charge of media. The radio station was established with the support of United Nations Development Programme, UNDP, and the UK Department for International Development. Swaziland plans to crack down on criticism of King Mswati III by making it illegal to badmouth Africa's last absolute monarch on Facebook and Twitter, said the Justice Minister. We will be tough on those who write bad things about the king on Twitter and Facebook. We want to set an example, Justice Minister Mgwagwa Gamidze told the Senate. The minister said government was finalizing a law that will make it illegal to speak badly of the king on social media networks, and that it would soon come to the tiny mountain kingdom's parliament, which rubber stamps legislation. Mswati has faced growing criticism and unprecedented public protests over the last year due to a financial crisis that has pushed the kingdom to the brink of bankruptcy. Gamedzi was responding to Senator Thuli Masani, who on Thursday said people continuously wrote terrible things about the nation and its authorities on social media. It's like the moment Swazi people cross the border to neighboring countries, they begin to go on a campaign to disrespect their own country and king, said Masani. Surely there is something that must be done with them. There must be a law that can take them to task, he said. Brussels is willing to bear the cost of Portuguese-language broadcasts on Euronews for 2 years, so long as state-owned broadcaster RTP maintains its shareholding in the Pan-European News Channel and pays its annual fees, said Vice President of the European Commission, Viviane Reding. RTP will also have to guarantee to keep the broadcast going long after the two-year period of assistance comes to an end. Portugal, through RTP, pays about 1.8 million euro a year to ensure the multilingual news channel broadcasts in Portuguese. But government cutbacks have put that service at risk. RTP has a 1.4% stake in Euronews and pays 360,000 euro a year in fees. The Netherlands has shipped a container with a mobile radio studio to Sierra Leone. The Radio Netherlands Training Center donated the studio to War Child, an organization that assists children and young people in war zones. There's a complete radio studio inside the container. Children and young people in Sierra Leone will use the studio to broadcast their own radio programs. The Radio in a Box concept is the brainchild of Radio Netherlands worldwide. It was originally designed to enable producers in disaster zones to get back on the air in the wake of an emergency. In the past, these mobile studios were sent to Indonesia, where there was an urgent need for radio broadcasts after the tsunami in 2004. RNW no longer needs these radio containers because it has built even more compact studios. RNW has one remaining radio container and is thinking of where it would be most useful. Special thanks to Andy Sennett at the Radio Netherlands Worldwide Media Network blog for the material used here today. For more reports from Andy, check out his blog, http://blogs.rnw.nl/media network. Or you can find a link for them at www.pcjmedia.com.
Thanks, Paulette. And you're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio, heard on shortwave, satellite, the World Radio Network, Cirrus XM, Sky Digital, and on great partner stations in over 20 countries. Burmese authorities censored a scripted election campaign speech by Aung San Suu Kyi last weekend by removing her criticism of the former military regime. Ms. Suu Kyi is standing in next month's by-elections, which are being watched as a test of the semi-civilian government's desires for reform. Part of those reforms include Burma's media. Now, UNESCO has organized the Myanmar Media Development Seminar, which was held in the capital Rangoon this week. Toza Lat, the Thailand bureau chief of the Democratic Voice of Burma, has been granted a visa to attend after 23 years in exile. He speaks next to Radio Australia's Sen Lam.
The conference is organized by UNESCO and IMS, International Media Support, Danish-based media development organization, because Burma is going to have a new media law. There is one conference already 2 months ago, so this one will be the follow-up. There will be a few media changes, media landscape change relevant to Burma media law or Myanmar media law in the parliament. So they are inviting a few different organizations and individuals to see what are the other environment, you know, what's in the media law regard to reference to other countries.
So am I right in thinking that the Burmese parliament is engaging you in a consultation on what the new media law should look like?
Yeah, that's what we think, you know. And there are quite a lot of changes taking place in Burma 1 year ago, including media area. You know, there is at least intention of changing media landscape and also going to abolish the censorship vote.
You're, of course, the Thailand bureau chief of the Democratic Voice of Burma. The DVB was at the forefront of footage being smuggled out of Burma during the last days of the military regime, covering the Saffron Revolution, also Cyclone Nargis. Are you surprised that the authorities have granted you a visa? Do you think the changes now in Burma, particularly where media is concerned, that they are quite dramatic changes?
Yeah, this is quite dramatic and quite rapid. I didn't expect this quick. The Burma media landscape is in the right track. I didn't go home for 23 years since 1988. You know, in the past, Democratic Voice of Burma or independent media is regarded as enemy of the state. But now at least, you know, there is offering and sharing of knowledge and working out together. So, in my opinion, I think this is quite dramatic change and also good opportunity to go and see what are the level of change. You know, there is a new administration led by President U Thein Sein, a few other moderate-minded leaders coming in, and also they are the one introducing series of change. So first, government to recognize media as fourth estate, you know, the important role of the media. So, yeah, there will be a high-level government representative going to be present at the conference. Quite a lot of Burmese, in general, are a kind of cautious optimism. Also, the media also in that stage of, you know, cautious.
And just as recently as the weekend, an election campaign speech by Aung San Suu Kyi was censored by the Burmese authorities. They removed critical references to the former junta. How much influence do you think the military still wields on parliament and the current government of President Hun Sen?
Look, you know, Burmese government is very paranoid military government. And also most of the people, especially Information Minister U Cho San, and you know, it is not surprised that they send Aung San Suu Kyi's speech. They even send the House Speaker to Tu Ashwiman's speech was not fully published in the state media outlet. So, I mean, of course, there is intention of relaxation and adapting to new system. At the same time, there is very much resentment and, you know, not sure to go from comfort zone to new, you know, open area.
And of course, as you mentioned, President Hun Sen last year announced the freeing up of media in Burma. But do you think local journalists are still pretty tentative and self-censoring in covering Burmese news?
It is said there is self-censors and, you know, also unfair regulation like, you know, Electronic Act. There many people can go to jail for many different reasons, basically using electronic media to bring instability in the country, then, you know, they are still regarded as the threat to the state stability and stuff. That's why, you know, this kind of media development conference or series of engagement with the government that, you know, freedom of expression is not threatening or not going to bring destabilization in the state. What we are doing is we're trying to facilitate to work out on this right track. You know, how far Burmese government or media landscape want to open up and want to change.
That was To Zaw Lat, the Thailand bureau chief of the Democratic Voice of Burma, speaking with Radio Australia's Sen Lam.
Call the PCJ answer line at country code 44-20-3286-1399. That's country code 44-20-3286-1399 and leave your comments and questions. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is PCJ Radio.
In Sri Lanka, the Foreign Minister, G.L. Paris, has condemned his cabinet colleague, Melvin Silva, for making public threats of violence against journalists and human rights activists. But Mr. Perez stopped short of criticizing the state-run ITN television channel, which days earlier had broadcast pictures of journalists and rights workers it had labeled as disloyal and traitors. The recent antics of Melvin Silva came as the United Nations Human Rights Council in Geneva, Switzerland, called on Sri Lanka to re-examine allegations of human rights abuses at the end of the country's civil war. Kanaha Sapati reports next from Sri Lanka.
On Friday, Sri Lanka's Public Affairs and Public Relations Minister Melvin Silva threatened violence against journalists and human rights activists who he says have been opposing the government. The ardent Sinhalese nationalist, who admitted forcing a journalist to flee 2 years ago, also warned that he would break the limbs of some named journalists and human rights workers whom he called traitors. His remarks came just after the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva passed a resolution critical of the country's rights record, and just days after the state-run ITN television channel broadcast pictures of journalists and rights workers it labelled as disloyal and traitors. Among the three rights workers named was Dr. Pakisodi Saravanamuttu, Executive Director of the Centre for Policy Alternatives.
Well, they've generally created a climate of fear, of hate and hostility towards us. They've called us terrorists, they've called us traitors. They say that we're working with the LTTE or remnants thereof, and we're part of the Western conspiracy to effect regime change and to sell the country out.
Dr. Saravanamuttu, who was in Geneva for the UN vote, says, apart from the spewing out of vicious hate and vitriol by state functionaries and ministers, the intimidation of civil society representatives at the UN plenary sessions did not go unobserved.
The Sri Lankan government was identified by the High Commissioner for Human Rights in Geneva for the intimidation of representatives of civil society at the council, around in Geneva and back at home.
This is definitely not beneficial to a government that is trying to create the image that it is working towards reconciliation after nearly three decades of civil war. Yet the government has not moved to stop Mervyn Silva, who has repeatedly used violent verbose tactics on those seen to be working against the president and his government. Frederica Jans is the editor-in-chief of the Sunday Leader newspaper in Colombo.
This government is on a path to authoritarianism. And in that context, they will not tolerate any criticism or any kind of dissent or any kind of voice which insists that there must be accountability post-war and some kind of adherence to human rights. So Mervyn Silva is actually used by this government very effectively to steal those voices.
Mangala Samaravira is a Member of Parliament for the opposition United National Party and a former foreign minister. He says Mervyn Silva, a personal confidant of President Mahinda Rajapaksa, cannot act with impunity without his support.
If the president is serious about implementing the rule of law in this country, he should have taken action against his minister many, many years ago. Instead, he has been rewarded with cabinet ministries and other perks and privileges, and he is allowed to do as he pleases. So it makes us wonder why President Rajapaksa is so much under obligation. Is it because he is his sort of man who carries out the dirty work for him?
So what does this all mean for reconciliation? Dr. Saravanamuttu.
Well, one hopes that the government will realize that it needs to turn a new leaf and to address the question of reconciliation with a sincerity of commitment, and that the time now for rhetoric is past, and what is needed for us Sri Lankans is demonstrable action to further reconciliation in the country.
Frederica Jans is not so hopeful. She says with the government even refusing to implement the recommendations put forth by its own in-house report, Lessons Learned and Reconciliation, the chance for peace is still a long way off.
State media is being used very strongly to attack independent journalists or free thinkers or human rights activists and political analysts and social workers who have been courageous enough to insist that in order for reconciliation to be meaningful in this country, then there has to be accountability post-war.
Mangala Samaravira says Mervyn Silva is just a small obstacle to peace. He says it's the government's triumphant attitude that stands in the way of reconciliation.
By not trying to win the hearts and minds of the Tamil people, and in refusing to come up with a suitable political settlement which could meet the justifiable grievances of the Tamil people, and of course people like Mervyn Silva, merely adds insult to injury.
And that was Kanaha Sapati reporting from Colombo, Sri Lanka. Now here's a question that I have for all of you listening right now. Let's say you're traveling, right? And you pick up some postcards and you send them off to friends. Let's say you had some left over and brought them home. And then you had to, I don't know, hand to an insurance company your bank account number or any other personal information. Would you write that on the back of the postcard and send it to them? Probably not. But there are many people out there that would say, you know what, I'm just going to write it in an email and send it to you. In email, people put all kinds of personal information, credit card information, passwords, bank account numbers. The list goes on and on. But did you know that if you do that in an email, that's just like putting it on the back of a postcard? It really is. Oli Batner is an IT researcher with the KTH Royal Institute of Technology in Stockholm, Sweden. Next, he speaks to reporter Brett Oscari about the personal information that people think is secure in email. But, he says, it's just like writing it on the back of a postcard.
Dagens Nyheter newspaper reported yesterday that someone quite high up in the command chain at the Defense Department in Sweden used their private Hotmail account to email top secret notes to the government administrative offices and FOI the notes were from a meeting with Saudi representatives. But on the way, it could have been intercepted by foreign intelligence, says the newspaper. Now several other former civil servants with the government administrative offices have come out saying there's widespread sloppiness when it comes to email security. And Dagens Nyheter reports this could just be the tip of the iceberg. You hear Olli Belter on the other end of this line laughing. He's an IT researcher with KTH Royal Institute of Technology. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, hello.
Why are you laughing?
Well, I suspected it for a long time. I wrote my dissertation about email usage, and this was one of the things that I pointed out 14 years ago, that email should be considered as a postcard. It's not more safe than that. And before you send every email, you should think, would this hold to be, you know, posted on the front line of a major newspaper?
Okay, I want to do a little experiment. So I'm going to send you an email from my private account, and I've totally made up the contents of the message. It's not true,
right?
But it's just an example. So let me just jot it down really quick and send it your way.
Sure.
Okay, I just clicked send.
Okay. There. Let's see. Brett Ascarelli, confidential. Wow. Yes. That was surprising.
Do you want to read it?
We have reason to believe that Benny Andersson of ABBA may be the next prime minister of Sweden. Shh, this is top secret.
So obviously this is totally fake. But if this really were a top secret, how secret would it be?
Oh, no. Anyone that has access to any of the servers passed on this route will be able to read this information, because it's email by default is sent as in clear text. See, I have 1, 2, 3. Yeah. By a quick look at it, I can see it passed 4, 5 servers. Yeah, that was a good guess. Five servers on the way here.
Five servers. And so in your best guess, what do you think was the trail of this email?
Let's say it started on a server in the United States, probably West Coast based. Goes over to server on the East Coast, over the Atlantic, somewhere in Europe, and not sure if it goes directly to a server in Sweden, but it might have been stopping on a server somewhere in Europe and then transferred over to a server in Sweden that recognized the server that I'm using.
And you're saying basically the whole time it's just as open as a postcard?
I would say the most vulnerable parts of this is actually the servers. Every server it passes, if it has spyware on it, would be able to detect the content of this email.
What do you think the solution is to keeping people from doing this, whether it's for convenience or...
Well, what I think the problem is, if we've started defining that, is, I mean, there are solutions. And I mean, had the email been sent from inside the Department of Defense, we wouldn't probably not have had this discussion. But the major... halt that so many companies that do this, and include, I mean, lawyer firms, for example, also has this problem that they have classified information that no one else should reach, and they build very tight security around the company, but it becomes impossible for people to work with this information, and therefore people use Google Documents instead, because it's so complicated. You have to take in the factor that every person using this system is a user that's trying to do work efficiently. And if the security of the system is preventing that, then you will not use the system. You will try to work around it.
So you just need to find some kind of balance, it sounds like.
Yes, and you also need to not everything should be dealt with the highest security.
Olli Belter from KTH, Royal Institute of Technology, thank you so much for joining us today to talk about the security of email.
Well, that reminds me, I wonder if I should have given my own credit card out the other day, an email to somebody on eBay. No, I'm kidding, I didn't do that. Anyway, you're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio, and it's now time for a look at what radio propagation is going to be like over the next 7 days. Here's our propagation editor, Dan Hensley.
On March 31st, we'll see a 10.7 centimeter flux of 125. On April 1st, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 130. on April 2nd and 3rd, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 135. From April 4th to April 6th, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 140. The A index will be 5 for the first 3 days of this forecast, covering the days of March 31st, April 1st, and April 2nd. On April 3rd and 4th, we'll see an A index of 8, with an A index of 5 on March 5th and 6th. The KP index will be 2 for the first 3 days of this forecast, covering the days of March 31st, April 1st, and April 2nd. On April 3rd and 4th, we'll see a KP index of 3, followed by a KP index of 2 on April 5th and 6th. Sunspot groups 14, 36, 44, and 45 are in view at this time. No crackling of the sunspot groups has been observed, and no threat of solar flares is expected. There are two coronal holes on the Earth-facing side of the Sun, and a solar wind from these coronal holes will reach Earth by the end of March. No disturbance to propagation should occur as a result of these winds. On March 27th, NASA launched 5 rockets in the Atrex project that sprayed the edges of space with a non-harmful visible gas to study solar winds at the edge of space. Results of this study are pending. Stay tuned to Media Network Plus, and I'll inform you of these results when they are final. Back to you, Keith.
All right, thank you very much, Dan Hensley. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of Media Network Plus. If you'd like to let us know what you think of the program and have any comments or suggestions for story ideas, our email address is very simple, mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. Before we end off, however, I'd like to say happy birthday to our own Paulette McQuarrie. She's now 1 year younger. So we're going to close with a song for Paulette called Love Is All Around, the theme song to the old Mary Tyler Moore Show. So on behalf of Dan and Paulette, this is Keith Perron saying we'll see you all again very soon. 73s to you all, and 88 to the ladies.
Who can turn the world on with her smile? Who can take a nothing day and suddenly make it all seem worthwhile? Well, it's you, girl, and you should know it. With each glance and every look.